Another We Need a Law flag display is vandalized.
There's a really vocal minority of students who advocate for abortion by portraying it as a good thing, as something that should be celebrated. And those are the students who tear up the displays and whose voices are really heard. But I did have encouraging conversations as well, people who were supportive of our right to be there despite disagreeing with our position.
On the feature, an interview with the head of the campus pro-life club at the University of Victoria, where a flag display was destroyed a few weeks ago, the second time in just a few months that this has happened. In the news, a major court victory for Christian foster parents. The first arrest has been made under Ontario's bubble zone legislation. We speak to the protester involved. And a big push to support a new motion in Parliament on the summer jobs program.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
A judge in Ontario has made a major ruling in favor of the rights of Christians who might want to act as foster or adoptive parents. The case involved a couple, Derek and Frances Bars, who had two young foster children taken away from them by the Hamilton Children's Aid Society in April of last year because they refused to tell those children that the Easter Bunny was real. In a 62-page ruling handed down last week, Justice Andrew Goodman of the Ontario Superior Court wrote that the decision to remove the girls was clearly a violation of the bar's charter rights. The ruling says, quote, "The society violated the bar's fundamental rights to freedom of conscience and religion and freedom of expression in relation to sections 2A and 2B of the charter." The bars were represented in the case by the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms. That group's John Carpe says this is one of the most unequivocal rulings he's ever seen.
A lot of court rulings are somewhat nuanced, and they'll say, you know, if it's Smith versus Jones, they'll say, well, we're going to rule in favor of Smith. However, Jones had this and this in his favor in terms of facts or in terms of the law. I mean, every decision you've got a winner and a loser, but a lot of decisions are more nuanced. This is one of the most black and white decisions I've ever seen. The court says that the Hamilton Children's Aid Society was completely and totally wrong in closing down the foster home of Derek and Frances Bars just because they refused to proactively tell the two young girls in their care that the Easter Bunny is real. And it's that refusal that the court found was the real reason and the only reason why the Hamilton Children's Aid Society closed the foster home.
Carpe says the very fact that the case ended up in court and that Hamilton's Children's Aid Society was prepared to go to court to defend caseworker Tracy Lindsay shows how far we've gone off track as a society.
The culture is rotten. It's been declining for decades, and to reclaim it is not something that can happen overnight. It's going to take years. You know, part of it is our education system. Children, at least in public schools, and even in some private schools, are being brought up in this kind of materialist, atheist type of a religion, which produces social workers like Tracy Lindsay, who then want to impose that religion on Christians.
But Carpe says this ruling does send out a very good signal when it comes to parental rights, particularly the rights of potential foster and adoptive parents.
The most important thing here is that we have a court precedent that says very expressly that foster parents, and by extension adoptive parents, cannot be discriminated against. They cannot have their charter freedoms of religion and conscience violated by a social worker. So that's a really good precedent that's going to be very useful for other situations all across the country.
Does this go to Bill 89 in Ontario? The deal there now is you can't be approved as a foster or adoptive parent if you don't affirm trans rights and all the rest of that stuff. Does this touch on that?
There could be implications for that. That bill could be challenged in the abstract without anybody's rights having been violated. But if there is a good fact scenario where a couple that was deemed to be very good and supportive and would make good adoptive parents or would make good foster parents, and the only reason that they're not allowed to become foster parents or adoptive parents is because they don't buy into the latest fashionable fad on transgender ideology, with the right fact scenario, that bill could go to court and you might see similar reasoning emerge. So yeah, this decision could have a positive impact on other court cases in the future.
no word on whether the Children's Aid Society might file an appeal of the ruling. The first arrest has been made under Ontario's so-called bubble zone legislation. That's the law that makes it illegal to protest outside abortion clinics. The law specifically references things that can't be done, including speaking with or otherwise interfering with people entering or leaving the clinic. It came into effect February 1st, and just 6 days later, police arrested 70-year-old Cyril Winter for being in violation of that law. But Winter insists he wasn't doing anything in violation of the law. He's been a fixture outside the Morgenthaler Clinic in Ottawa for almost 7 years. And after the bubble zone law was passed, he decided that rather than carrying a sign about abortion, he'd carry something different. A sign that said, quote, "Freedom of expression and religion. No censorship." He says he actually thought he had the okay from police to carry that sign inside the so-called bubble zone because it didn't specifically reference abortion.
I was surprised and shocked that they came after me because Sergeant Goo and Constable Vanderwater had interviewed me on the Friday before and basically okayed the sign that I was carrying, so it caught me by surprise. And then afterwards, when I read the actual charges, I realized that they weren't actually referencing the signs. So they sat there for a couple hours, just making up out of the blue these lies and pretending that I was doing things like photographing clients and or staff, observing for purposes of persuading, subtle stuff like that. So they're trying to avoid the charter issue by making up stories about that.
Winter says the security cameras from the abortion clinic itself will clearly show he wasn't doing any of the things he's accused of. Winter, who underwent open heart surgery just last week, is due in court on Friday of this week. And finally, the controversial attestation that's part of the application process for Canada's Summer Jobs Program funding this year is going to go to a vote in Parliament. The opposition Conservatives have put forward a motion which says that, in the opinion of the House, quote, "organizations that engage in non-political, non-activist work, such as feeding the homeless, helping refugees, or giving kids an opportunity to go to camp, should be able to access Canada's Summer Jobs funding, regardless of their private convictions, and regardless of whether or not they choose to sign the application attestation." ARPA's Director of Law and Policy, Andre Schouten, says the vote will force the politicians to take a clear stand on this.
The decision to incorporate this attestation, that was a decision made by the executive branch of government, so the Minister of Employment and the bureaucracy that works underneath her. And with this motion, what it does is it pulls that attestation requirement into the House of Commons, and there's going to be now a vote in the House of Commons about whether or not that's good public policy.
ARPA has launched an easy mail campaign on this. Schouten says while it wouldn't be surprising if the Liberals whip the vote, which would ensure the motion is defeated, there is precedent for the idea that the government could back down.
They have changed their minds in the past. You might recall the vote at the committee stage on Section 176 of the Criminal Code, the protection of religious worship services. The Justice Minister was in favor of it. And yet at the committee stage, we saw the Liberals switch their vote specifically in response to grassroots action.
The vote scheduled to take place next Monday. There's a link to the Easy Mail campaign on the ARPA homepage. Back with more after this.
The 12-Step Action Plan is entering its 6th month in March. We've heard some great things from folks just like you who've decided to take a few hours out of their day to do something, to get to know an official, or to spread awareness about something they're passionate about. We'd love for you to share your stories and interactions with us at info@arpacanada.ca, and we'll share some of these on our website. For more about the 12-Step Action Plan, go to arpacanada.ca/12steps.
And we're back on the program. For the second time in a little over 3 months, a We Need a Law flag display was vandalized at the University of Victoria last month. The Campus Pro-Life Club, Youth Protecting Youth, set up the display back on February 22nd on what's called the Quad. That's the common grass area near the Student Union building. It didn't last long, though. On the feature this week, Cecilia Filippone. She's president of the YPY Club. Hi, Cecilia. Welcome to Lighthouse News.
Thank you.
So another protest, the second one in a few months at UVic in terms of the flag display sponsored by We Need a Law. The first time it was vandalized, the flags were pretty much all ripped out and thrown into a pile. And this time it happened yet again.
So the last flag display, we started the display around
8:30 in the morning, had put out 10,000 flags, each representing 10 abortions in Canada every year. And we had a table set up, and we were just engaging with students in dialogue. And so we had a similar setup this time. Unfortunately, this time, students knew who we were, and they knew what we were about. And so things escalated a bit more quickly. So we again set up by around 8:30, and immediately there were students coming by, taking out flags, not so interested in discussing the display with us, but more intent just on vandalizing. So this time the display lasted around 3 hours. It was destroyed by around 11:30. Campus security was there the whole time, which was great, but we were disappointed with how things went down and how short the display ended up being.
I'm reading some other media accounts of this, and yeah, campus security was there, and Saanich Police Department was there as well. Mm-hmm. A couple of students who tried to take flags away were told by the police they weren't allowed to do that, but ultimately they were allowed to leave with the materials. Did we end up losing a bunch of flags in this one?
No. What happened was they did leave the quad with what ended up being four boxes, cardboard boxes of flags. They were warned by police that if they did not return the flags, they could be arrested, but they refused to comply, and police handed over investigation to campus security. Luckily, the students decided not to take the flags away with them. They dropped them off in a nearby building, and we were called the next day saying that we could come and pick up the flags. So luckily we didn't lose the flags, but it was a bit of a scare the day of.
What does this say about the state of discussion on campus? I'm looking at, there's a website called Victoria Buzz that did some of the media coverage on this, and I'm looking at some of the comment strings here. And I mean, there's one student there who says she's had an abortion and she's proud of it, and there's no way that this kind of display should ever be allowed. The university is saying it has support available for students who were traumatized by this thing. What is going on campuses?
It's really hard to pin down exactly what's going on. This display, I did have quite a few really good conversations with students about what they thought about the state of the lack of abortion law in Canada. I also had discussions with students who were very angry that we were there and really thought that the purpose of the display was to take away women's rights. The sense I got was that there's a really vocal minority of students who are advocating for women's rights, but advocate for abortion by portraying it as a good thing, as something that should be celebrated. And those are the students who tear up the display. Those are the students who are interviewed by the Martlet and Victoria Buzz and whose voices are really heard. But I did have encouraging conversations as well, people who were supportive of our right to be there despite disagreeing with our position. But it is disheartening that that vocal minority is the one that is overwhelmingly heard and that has the most destructive power on campus to eliminate groups like our right to free speech.
You know, what I do find interesting is you, Vic, did allow you to have this. I mean, a few years ago, there was some discussion about your campus pro-life club not even being allowed to do stuff like this on campus. That atmosphere has changed a little bit, no?
Yeah, it was really encouraging to have the support of you, Vic. There's a difference between, like, you, Vic, and the UVSS and their view of the club.
Sorry, what's the UVSS?
The UVSS is the student association, the student society at UVic. So they're an independent student group. They're the ones who run the student union building and the services there, and they're the ones that ratify clubs to be able to hold events like this at UVic. So through them, we are able to book events, but UVic has a say in it as well. So they're the ones who actually approve the event. So to have the support of UVic in upholding our right to function as any other club on campus was really encouraging. And even having the support of campus security this time around, it made everything a lot easier. And it gave us some backup when students would ask us if we were a sanctioned event and what we were doing there. So, yeah, having the support of UVic was encouraging this time around, for sure.
Given the attention that you're drawing to yourself with these flag displays, there's been two now. Is there any sense that the student society may want to pull your status as an accredited campus club?
I've had a few students come up to me and say that they would look into having our club status taken away. From the UVSS directly, we haven't heard anything. It's always a possibility. at the beginning of each semester, there's a club meeting. So representatives from all clubs who wish to have club status for the semester meet and are voted on. So if, for instance, at the next club council meeting, we showed up and were voted down, we're not allowed to have club status. It is a possibility, but that's something that we could also fight against. That's something that we could take action through UBSF and protest. So I'm not too worried about it, especially given the number of conversations I've had with other students and other clubs who support our right to free speech, despite disagreeing with our position.
So this was the second flag display, and it got vandalized too. I got to ask, are you going to try to get a flag display where it can be up all day, or have you pretty much said, you know what, we've made our point?
We were really happy with the dialogue that was created by the flag displays, and that ultimately is the goal of any activism that we do. So we haven't decided exactly if we are going to hold another display, but what we do want to look into is how we can have the most effective dialogue on campus. And if we think that having a display or having a similar display would be a valuable resource for students and a valuable opportunity to create dialogue, then yeah, I think we would consider doing it again.
Cecilia, we're out of time. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Al.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by going to our homepage, www.lighthousenews.ca, and clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the page. Or you can send us an email, lighthousenews@arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again in 2 weeks for another edition of Lighthouse News.